Hello everyone, thank you for waiting. Please take your seats, the show is about to begin. Ladies and gentlemen, and children of all ages, Cube 3's Glass to the Wall. Welcome to this week's episode of Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall with your host Adam Riley, right here on turquoiseradio.com. Well, we've been going for over a month now, and it's going well so far, don't you think? If you've got any thoughts, any feedback, please drop me an email at adam.riley, that's R-I-L-E-Y, at turquoiseradio.com. Or just head over to cubed3.com, that's C-U-B-E-D, and the number 3.com, and just leave some messages there. Any of the team will be more than happy to get back to you. This week's show is a little bit of a Heroes of Ruin special. Heroes of Ruin is an adventure, a dungeon-crawling adventure that was released back in 2012. And it's from Square Enix, the former Eidos Interactive team, and Endspace, the people that you might know well for doing Geist on the GameCube. Now, Heroes of Ruin was quite a special game on 3DS because it pushed four-player online drop-in, drop-out multiplayer, something that people didn't think would be possible on the humble Nintendo 3DS architecture. But hey, the team managed to do it, and lots of people raved about the game. Not our very own Liam Cook, though, otherwise known as Mush on the website. He felt there were many drawbacks with the game. So, following on from his review, which gave the game 6 out of 10, a far cry from all the 9 out of 10s that the game got from many other publications, I decided to have a chat with him, to see what his thoughts and feelings were about the game. What were the good points? What were the low points? What could have been done better? Where did he think that they went wrong? Well, to start off with, before we jump into the chat though, I'm going to give you a few highlights from his review. Because after all, I'm sure there are listeners out there that don't know all the details about Heroes of Ruin, purely because it didn't get too much promotional work when it finally hit the market. Heroes of Ruin is a dungeon crawler developed by Endspace and published by Square Enix. The title had gained quite a following during development, and the game had even been delayed a couple of times. Followers of the game were hoping for something big. But was Heroes of Ruin really as good as people were expecting it to be? Well, Heroes of Ruin was finally released in June 2012. Not a great time to release a dungeon crawler, though, due to Diablo 3 being shipped out a few weeks before. But, lo and behold, Endspace and Square Enix put it out there, and many 3DS owners were just itching to get their hands on it. The game takes place in the fictional city known as Nexus, in which players must find a cure for Ataraxis, the ruler of the city. And, like many RPGs out there, it's possible to choose from a variety of different characters, all of which possess their own unique skills and actions. Each character has their own skill tree, and players can choose whether they want to play through the game's story alone, or with friends, via local play or online play. Well, it sounds great so far, doesn't it? You're listening to Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall, right here on TurquoiseRadio.com with your host, Adam Riley, featuring Machinima Sound's Poltergeist. Visit www.machinimasound.com for more great music. Well, yes, sure, it has online cooperative play, four different characters, and a bunch of different skills. But it lacks something that most RPGs possess. And that is the ability to face bosses after killing them for the first time. This just throws the replay nature of the game totally out of the window, as a new character has to be created in order to fight a certain boss again. And even then, players must go through the various dungeons in order to reach that boss. So there is a lot of going over old ground. There are a few things that Heroes of Ruin does right, though, such as the randomly generated dungeon layouts and random loot drops. But other than that, the title just seems like a generic role-playing game that lacks any sort of character. When the game was in the development stages, Nspace actually touted the daily challenges, but almost a year after the game's release, these challenges have been nothing more than killing a certain amount of a specific enemy or clearing a certain dungeon. Not to mention that players may need to complete these challenges more than once, because sometimes the game glitches and forgets that the challenges have actually been completed. Heroes of Ruin is definitely an ambitious title, and Nspace cannot be faulted for that. It's just a shame that this ambition goes to waste due to bad design choices and annoying glitches, such as those daily challenges not registering as completed.
Do you think that gaming is just for squares? Just for nerds that sit in their room with no light? Spending their days endlessly in front of TV monitors? Well, that's certainly not the case with Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall. We're here for everybody. Every listener, tune in each week
to get the latest news, reviews, opinions, and special interviews. Remember, glass to the wall, from the gaming industry's mouth to your ears every week.
All in all, though, Heroes of Ruin is not a bad-looking game, but it's not exactly a great-looking one either. At the time when it was first revealed, maybe it looked very impressive. However, we've now seen that the 3DS is capable of much, much more. Heroes of Ruin basically turns out to be a generic dungeon crawler with repetitive gameplay and not much reason to use the character's different skills due to the incredibly easy difficulty level. Online cooperative play is a great addition, but the gameplay remains the same when played with more people. It just doesn't seem to adjust like you would expect it to. So, if it's easy with one player, it's even easier with a group of friends. Now, in terms of atmosphere, there are some really epic tunes in Heroes of Ruin that truly add to the ambiance. They really ramp up the atmosphere and the environments. Sadly, though, the voice acting is pretty weak overall. There are one or two sections that are great. However, there are many lines that are repeated far too often and short snippets of sound that are rather awkward. But, as already said, this will not last for long. After completing the short campaign, the only things left to do are the daily challenges and completing the campaign with other characters. Completing daily challenges will become a bit of a chore, especially because, well, the system's broken. Sadly then, despite all its promise, Heroes of Ruin is an average game. Well, maybe slightly above average, to be honest, hence the 6 out of 10. There are much better alternatives out there, though. Maybe not on 3DS, but there are definitely better alternatives available. And the daily challenges are nothing compared to the daily and weekly puzzles found in something like the Professor Layton games, and they don't work as planned. At the end of the day, for 3DS owners that are looking for a game with a lengthy campaign with some form of online play included, there are games out there that are far worthier of your money. Now, Liam's review sounds very negative, but it actually mirrors many people's opinions of the game. If you head over to cubed3.com and search for Heroes of Ruin, you will actually find a hands-on by me, Adam Riley, where I proclaimed my love for the game. And it's true. Most people that tried the early demo or saw early footage were extremely excited about the prospect of this game. Unfortunately, though, it did not live up to expectations. Now, let us continue by jumping into the special chat between me and Liam. When did you first hear about Heroes of Ruin? And what was your initial reaction to the premise?
Well, I first heard about Heroes of Ruin back in 2011. Shortly after the 3DS was released, around May time if I recall correctly, Square Enix, they released a teaser trailer for the game. It was only about 30 seconds in length, and just featured a bunch of words on the screen. It wasn't much, but it was still pretty effective. Especially because this was around the time when the 3DS was just taking off, so there weren't many good games around. Every game announcement counted, no matter what it was. So, I was pretty excited to find out more about Heroes of Ruin. So I followed it very closely. I watched all of the developer diaries and short videos which were released.
Well, yeah, I totally understand what you mean by that, because at the time, Nintendo 3DS was struggling a little bit in terms of third-party support. Well, hey, in fact, Nintendo was struggling to get games out on the system as well. Now, it's quite amazing that Heroes of Ruin came out last year, and yet it seems many, many years ago now since the game came out. It's been overshadowed by so many new games that have come out since. Now, it's one of those that perhaps if it had been released earlier, it would have had more of an impact. I do recall when the game was first revealed, it was quite thrilling. And yes, when the website launched, it was quite impressive and there was a lot of hype that was building up very quickly. It looked like, here we go, Square Enix's first major hit on 3DS. But then things started to die down a little bit.
You're listening to Cube 3's Glass to the Wall on TurquoiseRadio.com. Straight from the gaming industry's mouth to your ears every week.
The game was delayed quite often, wasn't it? Did that actually diffuse some of your initial enthusiasm for it?
Yeah, well, the game was delayed quite a few times. It didn't really have any impact on my overall enthusiasm. If anything, it made me feel more enthusiastic about the game. It made me feel more excited to see what the final product would look like, and I felt the delays were there for the developers to perfect the final game, which made me want to support them even more because I thought it was going to be a worthwhile one.
Well, when it comes to delays, there are two schools of thought. Well, there are those that believe that the delays are worthwhile. After all, if you look at some of Nintendo's projects, they get delayed and delayed, and it's for the benefit of the game, because after all, if the team is willing to pour in more and more effort, then yes, you're going to end up with a fantastic game at the end, bulging with content. On the other hand, though, it could be seen as if there are problems in development, well, does it mean that all these problems are going to be ironed out before release? Or does it mean that developers and creators and technical people are just running around in circles, banging their heads against the wall, not quite knowing what to do? Maybe they started with a fantastic concept, really something quite intriguing. They had a core concept, core gameplay, and then when everything was tied together, it didn't quite work. So they delay it, and they hope that they can find a problem. They hope they can fix everything. They think that maybe they can pack in more content just to cover up some of the problems. So it can be seen in two ways. Personally, I started to lose a little bit of interest. It started to slip away from my mind.
You're listening to Machinima Sound's Dance of the Pixies, right here on Cube 3's Glass to the Wall. Machinima Sound, quantity over quality. Visit www.machinimasound.com for more great music.
Do you also think that the delays hampered awareness of the game in general?
Well, this is quite an interesting question, actually. I don't think the delays hampered the awareness of the game. I think they made people more aware of the game because they'd log on to the big gaming websites like Cube 3 and see an article titled Heroes of Ruin Delayed Again. Headlines like this may make people aware of the game's existence or even remind them that this game will be hitting the 3DS in the next couple of months. On the other hand, however, some of the game's followers were disappointed, but at the end of the day, the developers just wanted some more development time. Even though these delays took place, fans and followers of the game still purchased it. Some of them really enjoyed it, others not so much.
It all comes down to perspective, I suppose. Like I said before, some people might think, yeah, cool, it's being delayed. I don't mind waiting a little bit. I've got too many games to play anyway. So I'll play through those, and then by the time Heroes of Ruin comes out, it's going to be a really well-polished title and something I can sink my teeth into. Others, though, rather like myself, become slightly cynical. And they sit there and they think, well, this game had a lot of promise, and now I'm being told that it's being held back again, and again, and again. All right, okay, they say that any news is good news. You know, even bad publicity can be good publicity. Not always, though. After all, if people keep hearing delay, 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 they'll start to lose faith in the developer. Just look what happened with Final Fantasy Versus 13. That's a game that was announced a long time ago, and it's been announced as being delayed. And delayed. And delayed some more, to the point where nobody even talks about it anymore. Now, okay, there's rumours that it's actually changed its name, and it may be coming exclusively to PlayStation 3 and 4. But any hype that was originally built up has totally faded away. And unless that gets marketed like crazy, Square Enix would have trouble with that particular game. Now, in that case, if it comes as maybe a PlayStation 4 launch title, then, okay, it will ride the hype train that's surrounding the new hardware launch. Heroes of Ruin, however, it was announced at a time when the market was kind of empty. It was coming with something that 3DS had never had before, drop-in, drop-out multiplayer. And it was an RPG. Okay, it's by Square Enix's London team, which is basically Eidos Interactive, under their new guise. Now Square Enix snapped them up. But hey, it was still Square Enix and RPG and online with drop-in, drop-out for up to 4 players. That was good. That was punchy. And it deserved the hype at the time. From early previews that I had with the game, it played, well, everyone said it plays like Diablo. I thought it was a little bit like Secret of Mana. You know, having several players joining in, running around the dungeons together, fighting monsters. It seemed like a brilliant concept. It really caught my imagination. I played it for many, many hours. And I spent a lot of time with Alistair and Rui at Square Enix, at one of the Nintendo shows, and I came back really looking forward to finally getting my hands on the end product. But then it dropped away from my mind because it was delayed, like I say. And when it finally came out in Europe, with Nintendo publishing it, it sneaked onto store shelves with barely a whisper. With barely a whimper. And the end result was, anything that had been built up had totally been flushed away. And the retail scene wasn't interested, and consumers weren't interested anymore, because there were other 3DS games that were starting to come out that were taking more of people's attention. So it sneaked into the UK chart at the very, very bottom end. Maybe number 38 or 39 out of the entire top 40, and then disappeared, never to be seen again. So yes, there are two sides to it. Some people will see that all the news will help it. Others may just think, well, you know what, forget it, I'm going to move on to the next title. Something that should have helped the game a little bit more, though, was a demo on 3DS eShop.
You're listening to Cube3's Glass to the Wall with your host, Adam Riley, right here on turquoiseradio.com, featuring Machinima Sound's Poltergeist. Visit www.machinimasound.com for more great music.
When did you finally get a chance to try Heroes of Ruin? And was the demo all that you actually imagined it would be?
Well, I first tried Heroes of Ruins when the demo was released on the eShop, and I actually kept checking the eShop early in the afternoon to see if the demo had been added yet. I was really, really excited to have finally been able to play it. As soon as I saw it on the front page of the eShop, I downloaded it and played the single player mode. I really enjoyed the demo and couldn't wait to try the final game, especially since I wanted to play through it with a friend. It was pretty hard to find your friends in the demo version, Thankfully, though, this was fixed.
As I said before, when I was at one of the Nintendo post-E3 events, I spent a considerable amount of time playing through Heroes of Ruin. It was okay, it was an early build, there were a few glitches in it, but it was a very promising title. It was filled with what seemed like very interesting missions. There was some great aspects to it. It's difficult to remember all the details from way back then, but I had a couple of issues with maybe the camera zooming out too far. Also, characters getting stuck and you lose track of who was where. But overall, it showed a lot of promise, and for an in-development title at the time, I was really looking forward to it. And the fact that they launched a website where they were actively encouraging people to pass on their suggestions to improve the game, it looked like nothing could go wrong. Because after all, how could it? The development team were offering up all the tidbits to the people that were watching out there in the world, and they were asking for feedback, and they were going to actually take it all on board. So yes, I really liked what I played at first, and was very much looking to it finally hitting retail. So you went out and bought Heroes of Ruin at launch?
Well, I actually pre-ordered it. So I got it the day before launch, and I was really excited to play it.
Well, how much time did you actually sink into it?
I probably played it for around 20 hours overall, especially since I was so insistent on completing all of the daily challenges. That was until the daily challenges started to give me grief. So I decided to play the game enough and finally put it down, never to be picked up again.
Sadly, I think I faced the same problem. I really jumped into it and was loving it. And I actually started to write a review not soon after launch. And I have to say, from initial impressions, I was well on the way to giving it 9 out of 10. Because, okay, despite the fact that the story seemed a little bit weak, I was loving it. I became quite addicted to it, playing through for hours on end, until everything started to become a bit repetitive and some of the cracks in the game started to show. There were quite a few flaws, unfortunately. And, well, it was quite disappointing for me because I like the work that Endspace does. The work that they did on the Call of Duty games on the Nintendo DS, for instance, were brilliant. I'm still a big lover of Geist. Geist was one of those underrated games, in my opinion. So I had high hopes that Endspace, working with Square Enix's London studios, I had high hopes that this would develop into what would be a worthwhile adventure. But the graphics were not quite as impressive as initially thought. The music became quite repetitive. The action became quite repetitive. And some of the voice acting, well, okay, I'm no expert, but some of the lines that were delivered were terrible. I actually feel sorry for some of the voice actors, because it's not actually their fault. They were told, most likely, just deliver one short line, or a couple of words, or maybe even just one word in a strange accent. And that's exactly what they did, and that's what exactly has been slotted into the game. So you end up with quite an eclectic mix of accents and just the odd one or two words that are repeated frequently, far too frequently. So wandering around towns makes you not really want to talk to any of the villagers. As for the online aspect, well, I didn't really have much luck finding people when I tried to search online at first, so I kind of quickly gave up on that and just focused on the solo mode. And the solo mode just seemed to be defeat so many enemies, find so many items, kill a boss, rinse and repeat in what is pretty much the same sort of dungeon again and again. The lack of variety seemed to be a bit of a letdown for me overall. so I didn't even really try many of the challenges because it didn't seem like there was a lot of variety in those as well. But I don't know. I often think maybe I would have got more joy if I'd tried out the multiplayer more often. Did you mainly focus on playing through the one-player adventure? Or were you often finding yourself delving into the online multiplayer antics?
Ah, yes. Well, when I first got the game, I started off as a character who was used purely for single player. I probably played through about 3 dungeons with this character until a fellow Cube 3 member purchased the game and I created a new character and played through the whole story mode using this character in multiplayer.
One thing that I did like about the multiplayer was the fact that you could really just drop in, drop out, bring your data across, switch between single player and multiplayer without any hassle at all. That was quite a neat feature. You didn't always have to just start from scratch and set up brand new modes. Okay, yeah, if you wanted to get the most out of it, then starting from the beginning with a friend in multiplayer was the way to go. But if you weren't too fussed and you just wanted to have a little dabble here and there, you could continue your merry way in your adventure and then get a friend to join in every now and then just continue on your own afterwards. It's always good to play with yourself at times.
You're listening to Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall on TurquoiseRadio.com. We're listening to the gaming industry for your benefit.
So what were your thoughts on the final game? Did it live up to expectations? And if not, where do you think it fell down the most?
My expectations, no. It didn't live up to expectations. And there were quite a few areas of the game which really disappointed me. One of the most disappointing things about the game was how generic and repetitive it was. There were some original characters in Heroes of Ruins, but the problem was there was pretty much no backstory to go with them. And the only story in the game was to save some king from a curse, or something like that anyway. Another thing that got to me, actually, was that they promised randomly generated dungeons, which was a great idea. But they butchered that idea by not letting you replay through those dungeons with the same character. And worst of all, you couldn't even replay the bosses. Which is a must for all RPGs, I must say.
You hit the nail on the head there with repetitive. And it was such a shame as well. As you say, okay, I mentioned that the voice acting was a little bit weird and wacky. But yes, there was a decent set of characters, but you really grew no attachment to them at all because there was no backstory, as you say. Things just didn't seem to be developed, almost like they built a game engine and then forgot that they needed someone to create quite a decent story. Because after all, a role-playing game involves quite a lot of backstory. It involves developing things, grabbing the player, drawing them into the adventure, making them feel like they're part of the adventure, like you are actually the character that you created at the very beginning. Well, what's the point of creating a brand new character and throwing them into a world where there's nothing that's really that engaging? Just hack and slash away, grab this, grab that, kill a boss, move on. Done, Bob's your uncle. You know, anyone listening to this would think there was nothing redeeming about it at all. Now, it wasn't a complete disaster, though. As I say, the core concept was very impressive. It just seemed to lack a little bit of polish. It lacked some care and attention. Maybe it should have been delayed for even longer. Who knows? Maybe they should just focus on a sequel. But what do you reckon? Are there actually any redeeming points?
Well, now that you mention it, as I noted in my review, Heroes of Ruin is an ambitious title, but most of that ambition goes to waste due to some bad design choices. The fact that this was the first 3DS game to support 4-player online cooperative is an achievement in itself. But I just wish they would have released a patch to iron out some of those issues which players had experienced in the game.
That's very true that there didn't seem to be a lot of support after the game, and I often wondered if that came down to the fact that sales were not as strong as expected.
Keep your finger on the pulse of the gaming industry every week with Adam Riley on Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall, right here on TurquoiseRadio.com. Join us every Thursday at 11 p.m. GMT, 6 p.m. EST. Or catch our repeat show on Saturdays at 4 a.m. GMT, 11 p.m. EST.
Many people might not even realise that the game was released in Japan. It just failed to make even the Media Create Top 50 chart, which means that it must have sold maybe a few hundred copies at the most. That's quite shocking. With Square Enix's name behind it, the game should have at least made the top 50. Even if it only sold maybe 10, 20,000 copies, it should have done something. But no, it seemed to be an unmitigated disaster around the world. So, what do you do in that sort of situation? Do you keep on pushing it for those hardcore fans that did buy it? Or do you just let it disappear? Stop throwing money into that bottomless pit, wasting your time, and move on to what could be a bigger and better next project. I think it became clear very, very quickly exactly what was being done from the team at Endspace and Square Enix's London studios. The game was being ditched. Do you think that the development team perhaps put too much focus on getting the drop-in, drop-out multiplayer mode to work on the 3DS architecture, thus neglecting the core solo mode?
I wouldn't say that they neglected the solo mode as such, since it's the same story, but you just play alone. What I would say, though, is that they should have spent a lot more time developing the characters and story, possibly giving them more in-depth voice acting rather than the cheesy in-game voices that they went with in the final game. They could have even kept the dialogue characters completely mute, as long as they had more interesting dialogue in itself. They also should have focused on making every dungeon a bit different, rather than just change the background and textures of the enemies. But they decided to make them feel like the same dungeon that you've been traversing through since the very beginning of the game.
It's funny that we keep coming back to some of the voice acting here. This game had a lot of potential for having some epic voices, and there were some, but the quality was poor. And then, as you say, there were some characters that really didn't actually need a voice. You didn't need "hello" and "hello" and "all right." Yeah, it wasn't necessary. It made it a bit weird and a bit clunky, purely because every time you spoke to the same character, you got the exact same line. "All right, all right, all right. Hey, hey, calm down." Bit like that, you know. And again, when it comes to reskinning the same characters, people are going to notice. Back in olden days, when people used to just see characters that were a different colour, it was the same character, but a different colour. That happened quite a lot, and it was purely because at the time the hardware wasn't powerful enough, there wasn't enough memory, it just wasn't possible to create so many different characters and pack them all into a very good game without some sort of compromise. Nowadays, though, there's so much space on these cartridges, so much space on the different types of media, and the hardware is so much more powerful nowadays, you don't just need to have about 5 different enemies throughout the entire game, just with different colours to signify different strength levels. I mean, come on, come up with a little bit more variety. Variety, 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 something else we've mentioned quite a lot in this interview. As for the dungeons, I think the problem lay with the fact that one of the big selling points was it randomly generated dungeons. So any time you went back to a dungeon, it was different. However, it wasn't really that different. I don't know. There's only so much you can do with a basic outline map. But hey, there we go. It was one of those where it was a good game, but maybe it would be saved by the download content. Because after all, the solo mode just wasn't really doing it for most people. despite the overinflated reviews from many websites around the world. Not going to name names, but it was very clear that some websites just got sucked in by the hype without actually seriously digging into the game properly before delivering their final score. After all, doesn't it look great to advertising partners if you give the game a 9 out of 10? Oh, did I just say that out loud? My apologies.
Q3 Glass to the Wall.
Q3. You're listening to Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall, right here on TurquoiseRadio.com with your host, Adam Riley, featuring Machinima Sound's Poltergeist. Visit www.machinimasound.com for more great music.
There was a big promise for plenty of download content and missions. What sort of content has been delivered so far? And did you encounter some of the issues other players have reported?
Well, I was honestly really, really excited when I heard about the downloadable challenges. But in the final game, I saw these daily challenges and nothing more than just achievements. So I was pretty disappointed. Usual challenges were like defeat 50 or so and so on of the same enemy, or complete the this dungeon. Nothing more than achievements that we see on the, say, Xbox 360. But I did try to complete all these challenges early on in the game, but I eventually gave up due to issues with these daily challenges not completing or saving correctly. I mean, I must have completed the second and third set of challenges around 3 times each, which just isn't fun at all. This is even more disappointing when you know that Professor Layton Games, they've had downloadable puzzles since the very first game on the Nintendo DS. And even more recently, Capcom is providing downloadable missions and extras for Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, which is on the very same console as Heroes of Ruin. What were you thinking, N-Space?
I actually don't think it can all be laid on N-Space's lap. I think some of it will come down to the fact that its hands were tied by Square Enix and the London studio, the old former Eidos team. As I mentioned before, some of it will have come down to the fact that, despite the initial positive reaction from people around the world, game sales, there were no fires started. people were not going crazy for the game when it first came out. And immediately you start to think, should I bother? Yeah, maybe. If we keep bothering, then people will keep coming back to the game. And good word of mouth is fantastic for sales. Yeah, that will be coming from the development team. From upper management, from the people at Square Enix that are still actually disappointed with sales of Tomb Raider, for instance, and Hitman, another game. Games that have sold far better than other entries in the series before. The Square Enix executives are not happy with sales of that. So do you really think that they were happy with the sales of Heroes of Ruin? No, is going to be the answer to that one. And does that mean that they were going to release any extra funding to pay for the people to spend more time coming up with fantastic new missions for the game? Oh, again, I think that's another big fat no. So, unfortunately, I think, despite best intentions from Square Enix London, and Endspace, I think the door was closed on that very, very quickly. So, Heroes of Ruin owners, oh, I feel sorry for you. But I do agree that the initial variety, again, that word, variety, of missions and challenges that were there from the start were quite mundane.
You're listening to Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall on Turquoise Radio. We're listening to the gaming industry for your sake.
How good a job do you think Nintendo did to help promote the game here in the UK?
I would like to say terrible.
Did you notice much media presence prior to launch?
Since I didn't see one TV advert. Maybe that's because I don't watch much TV. But when I did, I would see adverts for the 3DS, but not Heroes of Ruin. As for the online advertisements, I saw them all over the place, usually on Nintendo websites though, which pretty much defeats the purpose of advertising, right?
This brings up quite an interesting point here, because I know very well from many years ago back in the Game Boy Advance days, speaking with Square Enix PR down in London, internally, they were never really happy with the way that Nintendo dealt with their games. If you recall, every Game Boy Advance game from Square Enix, I think pretty much every game, that came to Europe was published by Nintendo. So you're talking about Final Fantasy IV Advance, Final Fantasy V Advance, Final Fantasy VI Advance. But then you also have Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, and there was also Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories. Now these are classic games. They're fantastic, brilliant, brilliant products. But what did Nintendo do? Nintendo signed a deal with Square Enix to deal with distribution and promotional work for the games. Well, what did that turn out to be? It turned out to be, pretty much, let's just shove it onto the shelves and hope that it sells on its name alone. Well, what happened? Nothing. Basically, the games tanked. It was shocking. You had games that could potentially have been massive top 10 hits, but they sunk without a trace. So I know very well that there were people within the old team. They don't work there anymore. They've moved on since, perhaps because of conflicts such as this. People were very, very happy, basically, that Nintendo and Square Enix cut their ties. And Square Enix suddenly started to self-publish its games in Europe. After all, there was Square Enix Europe that had been set up. It could look after its own games. It no longer needed to deal with EA, and it no longer had to deal with Nintendo on Nintendo formats. But then all of a sudden, what's going on here? Well, Nintendo dragged the Dragon Quest games over, and yes, there was a lot of success with Dragon Quest IX on DS. But there wasn't a lot of success with Dragon Quest VI on DS, something that Square Enix decided not to bring over. Again, Nintendo took charge, and it faded away into the background. It's almost like some employees snuck into the game one day, popped a couple of games on the shelf, and went, hee-hee-hee, there we go, we've done our distribution duties, and away we go on to our next big seller, our next first-party title. And that happened with Heroes of Ruin. The advertising presence was poor, other than, as you say, on Nintendo websites, where all of the coverage had been anyway. I don't think it is always the best idea for developers and publishers out there to shake hands with Nintendo in Europe. It's not always the best option. It does work sometimes, but Nintendo's priorities are, of course, on its own games. So, what more is there to say?
Think you know the gaming industry?
Think again.
Join us every week for the latest gaming news, reviews, interviews, and special features on Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall, right here on TurquoiseRadio.com with your host, Adam Riley.
Well, to finish off, if a sequel is ever made, how do you think Square Enix's London studio should improve the game?
As much as I would love for them to create a sequel, I'm not sure that they would actually go through with it, due to the disappointing sales of the first game. If they were to create a sequel, though, I think they should just create a bunch of fan polls before the start of development, just so they can get our ideas and use them in the final game. I wouldn't care if they used my ideas, and I didn't get paid for it. I just want to create the enjoyable four-player cooperative experience which the first game truly should have been.
I know there were plans to do a sequel, but again, I think that might have been the developers and their initial ideas. But sales being so low, I would have to agree that a sequel is quite unlikely. The saving grace would have been if Square Enix had brought it to Japan and it took off over there, but it didn't. It did worse than in any other territory. So I think plans for Heroes of Ruin 2 are out the window. Unless someone at Endspace can really twist many people's arms. In fact, it makes you wonder whether Square Enix and Endspace will actually work together again. After such an unsuccessful venture in the eyes of many, is it really worth teaming up again? Ah, if only Endspace would go back to Nintendo with an idea for Geist 2. Well, thank you very much for answering all those questions. It was quite an interesting chat. I never realised how much there was to talk about.
Thank you, Adam. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
This is TurquoiseRadio.com.
That's all we have for this week's show. I've been Adam Riley, and you've been listening to Cube3.com's Glass to the Wall, right here on TurquoiseRadio.com. Be sure to join us each and every week. When? Well, that's on a Thursday, UK time, at 11 p.m. And if you missed that show, remember, for those early birds on a Sunday, 4 a.m. is the time for you in the UK. Over in America? In that case, just take 5 hours off the times I mentioned. So, on Thursdays, you will be listening at 6 p.m. and on Saturdays at 11 at night. Those are EST times. As ever, please leave your messages at adam.riley@turquoiseradio.com. Or head on over to cube3.com and leave some messages on the forums. Remember, straight from the gaming industry's mouth to your ears every week. Until next week, goodbye.
Cube3's Glass to the Wall. Every Thursday at 11 p.m. GMT, 6 p.m. EST. From the gaming industry's mouth, straight to your ears, every week.